are the two Washington receivers to own this season? Will Eric Ebron return eighth-round value in FFPC leagues in 2016? And what running back should you be nabbing in the 18th round in every league you can? Plus, Jeff Seeley, co-host tonight, discusses how he won the 2015 FFPC 500 Dynasty No. 21 League, as well as his game theory in assembling his fantasy squads. We've got a great show for you. Jeff Seeley is here. Stick around. Your Eric Balkman Show episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour starts now.
Live from the WRST radio studios in beautiful Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and heard around the world on the WRST stream, it's the Eric Balkman Show.
Thanks a lot, Rob, and an early happy 4th of July to you, my friend. Greetings and salutations to all the Balkaholics, Anger, Zach, and Addicts. Welcome to the latest episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com. I'm your slightly above average host, Eric Balkman, and my usual co-host, the patron saint of fantasy football, Dave Dizzle Gerzak, has the week off. But sitting in for him tonight is a man I'm going to introduce right now. He has played in high-stakes leagues for the last 3 years in both in football, basketball, and baseball, most recently playing in the FFPC. His partner in many of these leagues, Nick, I'm going to butcher this name. I should have asked him before I came on the air, but Nick Raducanu, I'm guessing, from ProjectRoto.com. Many of you are familiar with that website. They got their first nice win this year, winning the FFPC Dynasty 500 No. 21 League. His style has gone from straightforward value drafting to more of a game theory approach. Many points where these two intersect, many in which they differ as well. He's coming on the show to tell us all about it tonight, and he is co-hosting tonight. Please welcome into the show Mr. Jeff Seeley. Jeff, thanks a lot for hanging out with me, man.
Hey, no, my pleasure. Happy 4th of July.
Well, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate you coming on a holiday weekend. Jeff, coming up on tonight's show, he and I are going to discuss some high-stakes auction strategy, where Doug Baldwin should be drafted this year, and how likely it is that Jameis Winston can add top 10 fantasy quarterback to his resume after this year. Shout out to the chat room right now. Feel free to post any questions you guys might have in there. If you want to connect with us on Twitter, you can do so at HSFFOR, at Eric Balkman, or at David Gerzak. Jeff, are you on Twitter? I should ask you this.
I am, yeah. I am He Hates Me on Twitter, H-A-I-T-H, He Hates Me. I went to Mizzou, and the former Missouri head coach was Frank Haith when I created my Twitter handle, and then I did a little obvious XFL tie there, so He Hates Me became my Twitter handle, and I'm probably best known for my Mac football plays that I've worked hard on over the last several years, and that's built kind of a cult Twitter following for me.
That is awesome, and obviously your Twitter handle much more creative than mine. I appreciate that. So you follow Jeff on Twitter at He Hates Me. We can also take your questions on our Facebook page at facebook.com/the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. You want to give us a call? It's 347-426-3682. That's 347 game over. And of course, the inbox is highstakesfantasyfootball@gmail.com. If you have any questions for us, get those to us now. Our mutual friend and producer, Rob, as well as our audio engineer, Bryce, will get those questions to us in the fantasy feedback later on, segment later on in the show. I want to normally, well, first of all, a couple of things up at the top of the show. One, hats off to Blog Talk Radio. They did not fix the audio all the way to where it was previously about a month or so ago, but it is better this week. It's not as great as it was, but it's much better, so hopefully you enjoy that. Thank you to them. Thank you to Bryce for working on that. And normally we kick off the show with some news, but tonight, since Jeff's co-hosting, I thought we'd get to know him a little bit first before we get into the fantasy news. And Jeff, let's start off with what you do for a living when you're not winning high-stakes fantasy dynasty leagues.
Sure. I'm a large group health insurance broker in the Midwest, and yeah, that's my primary job. My part-time jobs, I've had a kind of sports handicapping site for a few years. It focuses, again, mostly on college football and the MAC. But yeah, that's my primary source of income, and hopefully we'll win some more in fantasy football leagues going forward.
Oh, there you go. That's what it's all about. Congrats. Let's talk about your fantasy resume here. Congrats on the big dynasty win last year in 500 number 21. One of the studs that you had lost midway through the season was Le'Veon Bell. Now, he's coming off two consecutive season-ending knee injuries. How concerned are you from a dynasty perspective about Le'Veon Bell's future?
Very. But that said, our strategy, quite honestly, is win now and worry about, you know, everything else later. I feel like in dynasty leagues, so many people – I say so many, meaning the majority, really kind of shade towards the future more often than not. And I feel like a win-now strategy is contrarian in dynasty leagues. And if you can win one, two, three titles in your first 3 out of 5 years, let's say, you're going to be money ahead as you rebuild, you know, in the latter years. So my goal is to, you know, Nick and I, my goal is to make money now. We win some leagues now in this kind of format. While other people are trying to stockpile draft picks, we're, you know, building up our bankroll, and then we can worry about the rest later.
Have you been fielding many Le'Veon Bell trade offers? You know, given that he is, he's not polarizing right now, but a lot of people probably think, given, you know, the knee injury, they can potentially buy a little bit low on him. Or have you been shopping him around? Or has he been pretty outside of the realm of trade discussion for you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, he's not a guy we're looking to trade right now. He's not someone we're going to get fair value for, I feel like, at this point. And quite honestly, you know, at this right now, again, dynasty long term, I don't think he's a great fit. But this year, and maybe probably next year, when healthy, he's arguably in a PPR format the number one player in fantasy football. So if he's not, he's certainly top five. You can argue a handful, obviously, but he's certainly top five. And so it's highly unlikely we're going to get top five value. And again, we're not looking to accumulate draft picks right now. We're trying to win. So he's going to be on our team this year.
No question. He's a difference maker when he's healthy. Maybe the best or the most valuable guy to own in fantasy football. Definitely was the number one overall pick, consensus number one overall pick, two out of the last three seasons, if memory serves me correctly. So, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense to not look to move him at this point. Let's talk about a guy you did move. First of all, you trade. This was in the 500 number 21 league. You ended up trading I can't even read my own notes here. You got in this trade Jeremy Langford. You got the 104 this year, which you used on Josh Doctson, and you get a 2017 fourth rounder. You give up the 102, which turned out to be Laquon Treadwell in this league, the 312, which turned out to be Vance McDonald, and a second round pick in 2017. Talk a little bit about the philosophy in that trade in getting Jeremy Langford and the pieces that went into that deal.
Sure. I think what's important is to put some context within this whole thing. And so I prefer to look at this kind of in a balance sheet perspective, because that's kind of how we look at it. So I'm going to go back a little bit and just to put some context on this whole thing. On our trades starting in October, we had four. I'm not going to go into too much boring detail, but the balance sheet looks something like this. We started out in October. We had Teddy Bridgewater on our team. We had Eddie Lacy on our team. And we had our 2017 first rounder and our 2016 second rounder. We made some moves, but the net effect was we traded Teddy Bridgewater, Eddie Lacy, our 2017 first round and our 2016 second round, and we got Andy Dalton, Jeremy Maclin, and Jeremy Langford. So when you look at it from the, and again, there are a few other picks that were kind of in, but they're mainly a wash or a fourth rounder here and some things that aren't really germane as much to the deal. But the net effect is over the course of four deals, we give up Bridgewater, Lacy, a first and a second for Dalton, Maclin, and Langford. Now, that's you know, obviously much more of a win-now attitude than a kind of a longer-term play, giving it some of the future. when we first drafted Teddy Bridgewater, we kind of had a glass half full mentality, and now, candidly, I'm done with him. In terms of Jeremy Langford, the guy, he has the job today, and look, I mean, John Fox is going to run. So, you know, is he an elite back? No. He has the job. Is he potentially better than Eddie Lacy? Sure. I mean, Eddie Lacy's probably, again, as polarizing a player as there is. So, and, you know, again, we added Macklin, who I'm high on. I think I'm probably higher than most. Excuse me. But, and then Andy Dalton obviously speaks for itself. So I'm happy with the moves that we made overall. I'm really down on Bridgewater, really down on Lacy, and traded some future for three guys who have clear-cut starting jobs. And well, Langford's a little bit debatable, but we know they're going to run. If he gets 55% of the carries, then we're happy with that.
Yeah, definitely. And John Fox has shown the penchant to use one running back and not use a committee approach. So I think that that's going for you with Langford as well. Talk a little bit about Jeremy Macklin, who you get in this deal, because he was a guy that when he went to Kansas City, a lot of people were nervous about how he would excel in an offense quarterbacked by Alex Smith. And an offense that a wide receiver had not caught a touchdown in however many games it was. And he actually proved a lot of people wrong, and had a very successful season. I'm guessing that you expect more of the same. Could he actually be better in 2016 than he was last year?
Yeah, I really think he can be. And, you know, quite honestly, if you look at targets-wise, and again, forgive me, I'm not in my house. I only have one monitor in front of me. I usually have about three. But I, without looking at his targets, I know his targets were up. And I mean, I went to Mizzou. Macklin went to Mizzou. I've seen him play his entire career. I understand the injury risk, but that's football. Everybody has inherent injury risk. But the guy is a highly talented receiver. He's only 28 years old. And really, outside of Kelsey, they don't have anyone else to throw the football to. I mean, Jamaal Charles, clearly, or whoever's in the backfield. But from a wide receiver perspective, he's really the only guy. He has the ability to make people miss in space. He is quick. We know Alex Smith doesn't throw a great deep ball, but Macklin can catch a short and intermediate route as well. He has been doing that. And I forget what game it was last year, but there was one game where Alex Smith just literally was just looking at Jeremy Macklin all the time in the 2 minute drill. I think he caught six passes in the last 2 minutes of the game. I mean, and again, when you look at his draft, you know, draft snake, and if I look at, pull up the, for one second, I pull up the NFL 10 ranking, the wide receiver rankings, I know he's not going to be high. I have to look at it again, but he's undervalued, point blank. I mean, I feel like, hang on one second, I can pull it right here. Yeah, I mean, he's around, like, look at guys, I would take him above Michael Floyd, which he's above. I would take him, Kevin White, the perfect example. Kevin White's two spots ahead of him right now, being drafted two spots ahead of him right now. And there's no chance I would take Kevin White above Jeremy Macklin. Not even close.
And to your Macklin point, I mean, you look at the other guys in that Kansas City offense, the two guys you mentioned, Travis Kelce and Jamaal Charles. You have one guy coming off another torn ACL and approaching the wrong side of 30. And then you have Travis Kelce, a guy who many people who owned him last year were so frustrated by because Kansas City just did not throw him the football. Well, Macklin got a lot of targets, and I think that you make a strong case for him actually even being better in 2016. Jeff Seeley is our guest tonight. He's the winner of the FFPC 500 number 21 Dynasty League last year. Jeff, let's talk about the rookie draft, the rookie free agent draft you had in that league. You had more than five picks. I think you had – did you have six picks total this year, and you used four of them on quarterbacks? Give us some insight on why it was important for you to load up at that position in this draft.
Yeah, so last year QB was a real area of weakness for us. We had, prior to our Dalton trade, our two quarterbacks, and this is just crazy. Our two quarterbacks were Peyton Manning and Teddy Bridgewater, and our two running backs were Le'Veon Bell and Eddie Lacy, and we won the league. So, that's pretty crazy. So, and like, I think we had Dalton for 2 weeks, and then he went down with an injury. So, these QBs, I mean, quite honestly, as we drafted these, it was more, honestly, more kind of the best player available. And again, it was kind of contrarian. We know that some of these, we know some quarterbacks are going to get hurt, right? It happens every year. Some guys are going to get down. And as we've started looking what other people were drafting, there's not a lot of people that have QB depth in our league. And I know the argument for streaming quarterbacks off the waiver wire. And if you want to do that, that's fine. But I feel like a lot of the guys that we could have drafted are, you know, rookie free agent gambles with upside. And there's, you know, there's an angle for that, and I get it. Our approach was just kind of, listen, let's take known quantities of quarterback. Again, like guys like Tony Romo, we have, you know, we took Alex Smith because we've had him a few weeks last year. Obviously, we're going to have the Red Rocket as our starter. But we know at some point there's going to be people looking to deal for a QB. Should Philadelphia be successful, we've got Bradford, you know, and the rookie in North Dakota. His name escapes me now. But we've got, you know, we have some depth there. That's a kind of a dynasty pick. We have a lot of QBs, and obviously we can cut them if need be. But I feel like people are going to be coming to us to make a deal for a quarterback for Tony Romo or someone like that at some point. And that's why we have them.
I like it. It makes a lot of sense. You're zagging while everybody else is zigging. We've had a lot of people
exactly
come
right
on this
that's
show
exactly right
and do exactly that, and they've had a lot of success. So best of luck to you with that. Let's talk this was something I really wanted to get into with you when we were emailing before the show that interested me. When you talk about how you put your teams together initially when you started playing fantasy football, you said your strategy was, you know, a value-based drafting approach, which a lot of people do. Everybody gets that. And then it's now shifted to more of a game theory approach. Tell us a little bit about not only the differences between the two, how they're similar, but sort of how you've moved from one to the other.
Sure. And again, as I said, there is some kind of some carryover and blend between the two, and I'll get to that. But so when I – early, I think I was one of the early kind of pioneers in Twitter, on sports Twitter, actually, probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. And a guy I became good friends with, I'm sure many people on this show know, I know his real name, I don't know if they know him, but the guy called Fantasy Douche, I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And he kind of, I played a lot of poker. Matter of fact, in his first book, he and I talked a lot about poker and some game theory as he was writing that book. And he really had some, he and I have become pretty good friends and conversed a lot over the years about kind of more game theory and a football kind of game theory approach. And you said zigging while everyone else is zagging. And that is really game theory, right? It's just like DFS, if nothing else. You know, you're trying to figure out ownership every week in DFS and play accordingly. And so that's kind of the same thing. And so I feel like, you know, in credit to RotoViz and some of the guys there who, Sean, I think Siegel's high school, let them or Siegel, but the guy who put the, you know, the zero running back theory in play, that he played in some high stakes league and crushed. And I feel like the higher the league you get into now, the more people adopt that approach. And so, that's kind of been, if you know that going in and you say, okay, we're in a 12-team league and let's just say it's 70%. If 70% of the people in the league are going to go wide receiver, or wide receiver tight end, almost regardless of who that person is at that point, then inherently that's going to provide value, and it's going to be, and so drafting going running back is going to be contrarian. And so that kind of was our thought going into our draft. Now, granted, we ended up, you know, it ended up not working out great for us from running back wise, because in terms of Eddie Lacy and Le'Veon Bell, but that looked really good at this point last year. And so that's kind of, you know, one of the thoughts is, okay, when everybody else figure out what the masses are going to do, not necessarily just the masses, but the majority, right? If you are on the other side of what the majority of the people are going to do, and then more often than not, that's going to provide your value versus just saying, okay, this is the quote unquote value way to play, or, this quarterback is it's in the third round, and this quarterback should have been, Andrew Luck should have been taken, or it's the fourth round. Andrew Luck should have been taken in the third round. I'm going to take Andrew Luck now. That's not necessarily the way I think you got to do it. You have to really think. You have to have a plan going in, but then and try to figure out what other people are going to do going in. Once they do what you think, if they do what you think you're going to do, great. If not, you have to adapt. But it's more like a poker tournament. I feel like a draft is more like a poker tournament. You have to have ebbs and flows and do the opposite of what your opponents are doing. Whereas too many people have a draft list and associated prices in an auction and stick to that. It's very fluid. It's not a static deal.
Very interesting stuff. Jeff Seeley is our co-host tonight. Yes, it makes a lot of sense. And actually, I want to get into this a little bit more, but I want to take a quick break before we do that. Jeff Seeley is the 500 FFPC number 21 Dynasty League champion. He's going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more game theory and some Jacksonville Jaguar pass catchers right after this. Jeff Seeley is our co-host tonight on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. My name is Eric Balkman. I did not win the 2015 FFPC 500 number 21 Dynasty League. But lucky for everyone listening, Jeff Seeley did, and he's talking some game theory with us tonight. Jeff, before the break, we were talking about being contrarian and doing the opposite of the people in your league. And I think if you want to expand that to people who are drafting, an FFPC main event team or maybe drafting the Football Guys Players Championship this weekend, it's tough to beat out, more than 1,000 teams, or in the Football Guys Players Championship case, thousands of teams. It's tough to do that. And sometimes I think when I'm watching these drafts online, when I'm facilitating them, and I feel like, boy, being contrarian can certainly, I don't know necessarily if it's always a good decision, but if you have a team that is, has a lot of elite running backs when everybody else is pounding receivers, or has some elite quarterback options when, everybody else is stacking backs and tight ends, I feel like, that aspect of being contrarian can really help you much more so in a main event or an FPC type tournament, as opposed to just a 12 team league.
Yeah, especially one where there's no trades, right? So the theory behind a dynasty league draft, like I mentioned, drafting all those quarterbacks, is different than in a no trade league, like the Football Guys Championship League. And so and again, like a poker tournament, you have to get lucky. And so if you're going to win a Football Guys Championship and the whole thing, you have to get lucky, obviously. And for us, the luck, I guess, if you will, was that Ted Ginn was really good last year. we had Ted Ginn, and it was, we were one of the wild card teams going into the playoffs, and Ted Ginn saved us a few weeks. D'Angelo Williams saved us a few weeks. We handcuffed him with Le'Veon Bell. But, you have to get lucky, but by the same token, right, you have to have a theory going in, a game plan going in, and if the more contrarian you're playing, the more likely it is you're going to fall on your face. And quite honestly, I haven't had a lot of success in some of these higher stakes leagues, but I don't play a ton of them. I think I've probably played 10, prior to this, so that's a pretty small sample size. And I take a high variance, highly contrarian model, and so when that doesn't work, and I fall flat on my face. But I figure that, if I play in 10 and one wins me 10 grand, or maybe one wins me, I lucky I won 100,000 or something, that'd be great. But I'm willing to invest the money and take the contrarian approach, because I know basically fundamentally my logic is sound. And if my logic is there and I'm lucky, I'm going to win a lot of money. So,
Jeff, let's talk about what I teased before the break, the Jacksonville pass catchers. I feel like there's been, what we've been reading in the last week or so, has been a lot of positive reports coming out about Julius Thomas, some beat writers calling him uncoverable, and that he's just having his way with the Jacksonville defense. I want to know that if there is a possibility right now, and I know there's a possibility, but I want to know how great that possibility is that maybe drafting Julius Thomas as the 11th or 12th tight end off the board might not be drafting him appropriately, as he should be going higher. And then maybe the fact that a lot of people are taking Allen Robinson in the mid to late first round, maybe they're overdrafting him a little bit, and these guys should be coming together closer in ADP as we move closer to the start of the NFL season. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I agree with you, and I agree with all of your thoughts there. But the one guy you didn't mention that I think is kind of the standout here that, well, that I think is really underrated in this whole conversation is Allen Hurts. And that's a spot where, you know, he's being drafted around Kevin White, around Michael Floyd, around Corey Coleman. And, you know, quite honestly, I would wager with anyone, fantasy points wise at the end of the season, Allen Hurts outscores any of those other three. And so, well, I think you're right. I think Allen Robinson is being drafted a little too high. I mean, he's wide receiver 5 overall. I think that's a little high. I love Allen Robinson, but I think that's high. Julius Thomas is being drafted behind Fleener, Ertz. Yeah, I don't agree with that, either one. So I like him more than both of those. I actually like Terry Barnes more than both of those, too. That's a different conversation. But I think Allen Hurts is really kind of the unsung hero here. And in the sixth round, I'll take Allen Hurts all day long.
Let's talk about Hurts a little bit. Is it because he got that big contract from Jacksonville? Is it a case of just more of a leveling out of the receiver production because it was so heavily slanted towards Allen Robinson last year? Do we see just those guys just get more on a level playing field? I mean, is it just a closer to the mean discussion for both Robinson and Hurts this season?
Yeah, I feel like you're spot on. I think that's exactly right. I mean, I just feel like the talent between the two, the talent delta between the two isn't 5 rounds. And Allen Robinson is kind of the quote unquote number one, but they're not going to double coverage. If they do double cover him, goodness, fine. Okay. Hurts is going to be, he's going to have a great day. And the safety is going to struggle because they got to need to help with Julius Thomas. I just feel like they're both guys are going to be single covered. I feel like Bortles is going to want to, you know, again, like you said, level things out a little bit. He proved last year that he's very capable. I mean, I had every week I played Allen Hurts, he had success last year in DFS. He's a very talented. I think he's as talented, I mean not talented as A-Rob, but I mean he's a talented receiver. He's proven that time and time again. I think he's gonna get hit. So I think that's the value in the Jacksonville offense.
We've seen it with Hurts already. A lot of the guys you said around Hurts, the Kevin Whites of the world, we haven't seen it yet. So there is something to be said about Hurts in that area. Two of your rookie free agent draft picks, Jeff, in your championship 500 number 21 draft this year, Washington wideouts, Josh Doctson and Pierre Garçon. You get both of them in this draft. How do you see that situation shaking out in 2016 in D.C., and we could throw DeSean Jackson into the mix as well, but where do you see the value coming as far as those three receivers go?
Yeah, so the Garçon pick was really kind of – I mean, Doctson really was obviously a dynasty pick, quote-unquote dynasty pick, and Garçon was kind of Doctson insurance, if that makes any sense. Jackson and Garçon are both 30, or they will be 30 this season, and we're not huge fans of either. But, you know, Cousins has proven to be more than capable, and the safeties we've worried about Jordan Reed. So we like the opportunities that the receivers are going to have. We figure that Doctson will probably start about 8 games this season at least, because I'm willing to bet that between Jackson and Garçon that there's a reasonable chance that between the two they'll miss at least 8 games, you know, in aggregate, which would give Doctson clearly a starting opportunity. So, you know, he's a big guy. He caught a ton of TDs in college. He's a strong route runner. And, you know, as we looked at their schedule, again, I do a fair amount of betting. And so I've already pegged, like, the over for 9 Washington games this year. I think it'll be 50-plus points scored in 9 of their games. So, you know, if you assume, let's just say for argument's sake, that Doc starts 4 of those, I really like him. Garçon starts the other 4. Again, he makes sense. Neither were – I mean, we used Doctson for our first pick because we think he's a good long-term play. Garçon, when he starts, gets plenty of targets, has deep threat capabilities when he doesn't drop it. So we like just kind of that play in general. So we're
you know,
on the Washington offense.
Well, and to your point in a, from a redraft standpoint, when you just talk about 2016, you bring up the point about Jackson and Garcon, who've had their fair share of injuries. Talk about the Washington passing game as a whole. Jordan Reed is no stranger to the trainer's table, and he is a big part of that offense. If he goes down, somebody has to step up. The Reds, sure. The Redskins do not have a dominant running game. I mean, they have some talent back there, but Matt Jones and Chris Thompson, I mean, two of their biggest assets are their pass-catching ability. So I feel like Cousins will be passing quite a bit because that's what the talent around him is going to be best at doing. And if any of those guys were to go down, you have your first-round rookie pick for Washington that's able to step into a pretty meaningful role right away as a rookie.
No, yeah, I completely agree. And that's kind of why we picked him. I mean, there's a lot of value there. And we think long-term he's a really good play, especially as Cousins continues to develop.
Jeff Seeley, the FFPC 500 number 21 Dynasty League champion from last season, is joining the show tonight, co-hosting with me. Jeff, you're also going to be one of the players in the 750 auction out in Las Vegas at the Westgate in a few months. I think given what we talked about with being contrarian and doing the opposite of what the majority is doing, I think that could be very interesting when it comes to an auction league. Talk a little bit about your strategy and how you normally like to build your auction teams.
Well, it's funny because, auctions are unique, obviously completely unique, and I've done plenty of online auctions. This will be my first live auction, so I'm excited about that. I think the key is obviously it's preparation like anything else, but in a traditional snake draft, obviously you can see what everybody's else's roster composition. You can see who's being taken. You can zig when zagging. Auction's a little bit different, and you have to. I honestly have a fairly straightforward approach in this. Is I have my prices for everyone going in. But again, it's kind of like a poker game. You have to use your balance sheet as a weapon in auctions. And so what is every bit as important as who is on your roster is how much money you have left and how much money the person you're bidding against in a bidding war it has left and who's currently on their roster. So for you to just kind of sit back and scratch names off your list and bid up guys that you're interested in, make sure you get the guys you want, is a lazy losing method, I feel like. Live online in any way. It's easier for me online because you can have multiple screens and do these a little easier. But nonetheless, we'll definitely be tracking what all of our competitors are doing, how much money they have left, because, again, if someone's bidding if you think someone's trying to price enforce on you, you can stick them with a guy they necessarily may not want, and then they don't have any money left later on when there's maybe a guy you want. So there's a lot of strategy in putting up a guy you think is highly popular, like a Kevin White. I'll just use an example of who I hate, someone will like. I know like two or three people at least will love that guy and will probably overpay for him a lot more than I would. Or there's another guy who's kind of polarizing that many people may feel like a, I think, a really good example.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Eddie Lacy before too.
Yeah, Eddie Lacy is another perfect example. Exactly. He's a perfect example. Eddie Lacy is a perfect example. Alshon Jeffrey is another really, really good example. I happen to be super bullish on him, but others aren't as bullish as I am. So he's a guy that I will probably own, and I will be willing to pay a little more than normal. But again, if you keep your prices and you're going in, and you know basically where guys should go price-wise, then if you get the guy that you had for $30 for $25, then it gives you a little more room to bid an extra couple bucks on a guy that you like that you may, that may be a little more expensive than you normally like to. But again, knowing where you are dollar-wise and knowing where everyone else is, I think, is crucial. Also, and I don't want to give away all the secrets, but one other big thing that I think is a fundamental flaw people make is hanging on to money too late. Because I feel like early in the draft, I mean, super early, like top 3-4 picks, you get an elite player and you pay what may seem a little bit high for that guy at the time, And then, you know, if, about two rounds later, you see guys who – people who have sat on money for too long end up overpaying for guys who aren't half as valuable as the guy you got. Does that make any sense?
No, listen, man. No, it totally does. I totally agree with you. You know, we go down to the Kentucky Fantasy Football State Championship every year, Dave Gerzak and of course, Two-Packer and the real Leroy and our good buddy Kurt. We go down there every year, and the first event that we go to – is the auction on Friday night. It kicks off the weekend, and it doesn't fail. Well, it usually doesn't fail. I mean, I would say 95% of the time. Like you said, the first three or four guys off the board usually cost a lot, and then you look back on it after the draft and or after the auction, you're like, oh, how did those guys get, you know, Le'Veon Bell for that much? How did those guys get Antonio Brown at that price? You know, and I think that you're totally right. I mean, for whatever reason, maybe everybody's got just getting the jitters out, you know, sort of like in the Super Bowl when the first few minutes, everybody's just still kind of nervous because of the moment. And you do all this prep and it all builds up to that moment where the auction starts. And maybe people do have the jitters right away and you get some deals. We've always done that in that league. We always try to buy a stud early because he usually comes at a discount. So it totally makes sense. And I totally agree with you there.
Sure.
Jeff, we do have some emails to get to, and I'm going to tackle the majority of them later on in the show, but I do want to get to two of them right away before we move on. The first one's from Tony in Green Bay, Wisconsin. He writes, is Jared Cook on your radar as a sneaky pick who could threaten to finish in the top 10 at the position? He's never had a quarterback this good before or honestly played in as dynamic of an offense in his career. Go Pack, go. Thanks for the email, Tony in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Jeff, what's your opinion on Jared Cook? You know, I a half hour, whatever it would be, a half hour southwest of Green Bay here in Appleton, Wisconsin. So I obviously follow the Packers closely. I was not too excited for Jared Cook's prospects when the Packers signed him to that year deal. I don't know if you have any strong feelings either way on Cook, but I'm not too excited.
You know, it's funny. I last year I was kind of a Jared Cook truther, and it really burned me a lot last year. I played him a whole lot in DFS just because he got a ton of targets, and at least relatively speaking in that Rams offense, he got a lot of targets. He had a fair amount of drops, a fair amount of just bad passes. So I think Jared Cook is not without talent. Do I think he's going to be a top 10 receiver or high tight end by any stretch? I really don't. I don't think that there are enough balls to go around to Green Bay to make him a top 10 tight end. There are way, way, way too many other guys I would take ahead of him. I mean, he's talented. But don't get me wrong. The guy has talent. He's athletic. He's huge, and he can play. I think his situation is more of a situational spot. I think he has talent. Maybe some injuries. If some injuries occur, he's got an outside shot. But I don't know. Maybe he's 50-1 to be a top 10 tight end.
Yeah, it's because, I mean, there's so much stuff has to fall into place for him to do it. You talked about it. Nelson and Cobb and Lacey and whoever the third receiver is going to be there. And Rodgers is not one to zero in on one guy. So he's, you know, I can't imagine Cook getting a high volume of targets. It could happen, but I think those odds are probably fairly accurate in my opinion. This is an interesting email here, Jeff, given what we were talking about. This is from Charlie in Greenwich, Connecticut. He writes, hello, Balky and Jeff. Last week, you guys talked this nonsense about zero WR. Anyone that does that is trying to lose. No way can you not take a receiver until round 5 or 6 and expect to get every week production from those scraps. Tell me I'm wrong. I know you can't. Seriously, though, love this show. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Charlie in Greenwich, Connecticut. Now, I don't know what your opinion, Jeff, is on to take this to the extreme. I mean, you had the zero RB theorem, which essentially prevents you from taking a running back in like the first 5 rounds, you know, not taking a running back till 6. And to do zero WR where you're loading up on running backs, tight ends, and maybe a quarterback and not take a receiver until round 6, that is super contrarian. I don't think I'd be able to do something like that in one of my leagues.
No, I totally agree, and I would never condone that. I mean, I think that in the FFPC type formats. I think it certainly favors tight ends, certainly high volume tight ends to a degree. So, but no, I would much more condone, you know, running back, tight end, wide receiver, or running back, wide receiver, tight end. Well, last year we went Bell, Lacy, Alshon Jeffery. So that's, you know, I'm talking about when I say, I don't want to say zero wide receiver, but I'm talking about running back, which again is almost, it sounds silly, right? Because it sounds like 1985 fantasy football, but that's like contrarian
right.
today. And so, you know, that's kind of that I far more condone. No, you have to have wide receivers. Totally agree. And if you look at our team, I mean, the makeup of our team now, we have, you know, we have Jeffrey, we have Macklin, we have Edelman, none of which are super locked to stay healthy, but they're all like in really good situations if they are healthy. So it's again, we're kind of a zero sum game here. We're either going to win or finish dead last, but you know, we recognize we're highly leveraged, but again, wide receiver is crucial, and I would never condone not doing it. I'm just saying there are a lot of people in these leagues who will draft tight end and wide receiver, who will pass up Todd Gurley to take Dez Bryant. I would never do that. I wouldn't. I would never do that.
RB is the new zero RB, essentially.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah, now that, you know, if enough people say this on a podcast, it won't be anymore, and then I'll have to go zero RB.
Right. Yeah,
but
it's all cyclical,
kinda,
essentially.
That's exactly right.
Jeff, you've given us so many nuggets of guys that you know, you're particularly high on this year, and guys that you're kind of avoiding. But if I can reach into that well one more time and ask you a guy that you're really starting to like for this upcoming season, and a guy that maybe is going to be drafted high that won't find himself on any of your squads this year.
Yeah, I mentioned briefly, and I'll just dig a little deeper into this. I'm a huge Alshon Jeffery guy. I think with a fair degree of confidence that he will be a top five PPR wide receiver this year. And I know that's not like going on a super limb, but I mean, I could see him be top three. I just think that he's going to get, I think the Bears are not going to have as much volume as they did last year. And Kevin White's kind of an unproven commodity. Maybe he's going to be good, but you know, you got Zach Miller and there's other options there, but you know, Cutler has proven nothing else. If you know, we all seen Jay Cutler. He just locks in on a receiver and just throws to him. As a Packer fan, you probably enjoy that. But, you know, and I feel like that's what he's going to do with Jeffrey this year. I won't be sure. I mean, he's going to get all the targets. Like DeAndre Hopkins-style target volume, I feel. Maybe not quite that high, but he'll approach that. And he's just as talented. And so he's a guy that I am higher on than many. A guy I'm not as high on as some people are. Gosh, it's tough. I have a couple in mind, but I guess I would probably say Adrian Peterson, and I'm not going to own Adrian Peterson pretty much anywhere unless it just becomes a value that I just can't possibly pass up. But you know, when I look at the pantheon of running backs and kind of even the total where people are getting drafted right now, I just look at guys around him. I worry, I don't know, injury-wise, I worry about him more than I do Le'Veon Bell, to be honest. I think Teddy Bridgewater stinks. And so Adrian Peterson's a very talented athlete, but he's getting older, and I'm not as high in Adrian Peterson as many. You know, when looking at his draft, I'd rather, and this is going to sound crazy, but I'd rather have Doug Martin. I would draft Doug Martin before I draft Adrian Peterson. So you want your hot take. There's a hot take. I would take Doug Martin before I take Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, that's quite bold. I like it. And honestly, you can make as strange as it sounds, you can make a pretty decent case for Martin over Peterson. Jeff, this has been tremendous. We're going to keep you on for a little bit longer. We're up against the break. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to go through the news with Jeff Seeley, the 500 FFPC Dynasty number 21 champ from last year. We'll kick things off with a little Ezekiel Elliott talk right after this on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. Welcome back to the HSFF Hour. I am Eric Balkman. My normal co-host, David the Dizzle Gerzak, is off this week. So we have Jeff Seeley, the 500 number 21 Dynasty League from the Fantasy Football Players Championship, co-hosting tonight. And for those of you who want to play in leagues, Dynasty Leagues like the one Jeff won last year, go to myffpc.com. We have some startup dynasties kicking off this month. We have the Football Guys Players Championship, where you can win $250,000 if you win the whole thing. And even if you don't, finish in the top 650, you'll get a prize. $1.8 million prize pool there. Satellite signups and our Superflex Leagues going on right now. You can check all that out at myffpc.com. I want to thank Draft Sharks, Football Guys, and, of course, our mutual friend and producer, Rob, for putting together tonight's rundown. Let's kick things off with David Hellman from the Cowboys official website reporting that there's roughly going to be 280 to 300 carries for Ezekiel Elliott this season. The lower end, 280, that would have ranked third in the NFL last year. The higher end, 300, would have ranked second in the league had Elliott achieved those carries in 2015. Only three rookie running backs have ever topped 300 carries in the last decade, and only five have even reached 280. But remember, this is a Cowboys offense that is still trying to replace DeMarco Murray, still has that super strong offensive line, and they did give DeMarco Murray the ball 392 times in 2014. They used the fourth overall pick on Elliott this year. All good things, but it's also driving up his ADP. So are you good, Jeff, with taking Ezekiel Elliott in the late first, early second round? Because that's sort of where he's going in redraft leagues at the FFPC right now.
I am. If there's one thing that you know about Jerry Jones is that he has influence with the coaching staff, clearly. And if he doesn't like the way things are going, he'll go down the sidelines. We've all seen that. I expect them to – I mean, he drafted this, and he's getting a bunch of grief about it. So I expect him to prove a point with this. And, I mean, let's not pretend that anyone coaches the team but him. So I expect him to get the ball a lot. Win, lose, or draw, win or lose on Elliott's shoulders. So I think he will get, I think he'll get the carries. And again, I think, 1,500 yards and 10 to 12 touchdowns is a reasonable expectation. And so I'm fine where he's being drafted. And I think he's in a great situation. So I wish I had a hotter take for you there, but I really believe that's how it's going to play out.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, if Ezekiel Elliott puts up those numbers, he is well worth a first-round pick. And then, if he puts up those kind of numbers this year, he's got to be in the conversation for first overall pick next year, which honestly, some teams have drafted him already as the first overall pick in redraft leagues. This was more closer towards, just after the NFL draft, but he's sort of settling in the late first, early second. We'll have to see what happens in the preseason with him to see if his value changes. But yeah, I'm kind of bullish on him as well. A guy I'm not bullish on, but I'm also not bearish on. I don't know what I think about this guy. I've flip-flopped back and forth with Doug Baldwin. He gets the four-year extension with the Seahawks. Adam Kaplan reporting that the deal worth $46 million total, $24 million guaranteed. Last year, of course, Baldwin had a 76 for 1,069 and 14 touchdowns line. This is an interesting stat from Chris Wessling from NFL.com. Of the 87 receivers to play at least 25% of their team's snaps last year and get an average depth of target beyond 10 yards, I know that this is a very specific stat, Baldwin had a completion rate of 79%. That was good for best in the league. Baldwin was also the only wideout to have double-digit touchdowns and average at least 10 yards per target. Going in the mid to late fourth round right now in FFPC and Football Guys Leagues, Jeff, is Baldwin being overdrafted or should he be a solid fourth-round pick this year?
Honestly, I'm like you, and he has to have touchdown regression, right? Like, there's no way he's going to score 14 touchdowns again. So let's just take that off the table right now. I think 10, double digits, is a fair estimate. I think somewhere probably between 9 and 11 is probably close. Maybe 8 and 12, they'd be a little less. But that's kind of ish where he's going to be around 10. I think he's got to have some touchdown regression. That said, you know, I think late fourth, early fifth round isn't terrible. You know, I won't be drafting him there, but I can understand the logic. I like you, am not super high on him. And, you know, again, it comes down to who else is out there, who else is he competing against. So, you know, if I'm in a FFPC draft and I'm looking at this and I look at who's being drafted around him, and so, again, if I look at the guys in the neighborhood, and if it's between Jeremy Maclin, Doug Baldwin, and Greg Olsen, I'm taking Jeremy Maclin and Greg Olsen before I'm taking Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, and the other thing with Baldwin, too, is he's not, like, a really exciting pick. And normally I like those guys that typically nobody really wants to draft because they're not, like, it's not, like, a sexy name. He's, like, not this insane athletic prodigy who puts up video game numbers. And normally I draft those guys because not only do they produce, but they slip in drafts and you get good deals on them. To me, Baldwin in the fourth is not necessarily a good deal. I mean, if you're taking him there, you're counting on him as probably your second or third receiver. And maybe it's because I'm higher on Tyler Lockett this year, and I feel like much in the same way you're describing the balance between Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns sort of leveling, well, not leveling out, but coming closer together this year. I feel like that happens between Baldwin and Lockett too. So I'm much more likely to take Lockett in, like, you know, the sixth round than I am Baldwin in the fourth. Let's move on about.
So can I hijack one of your questions? Your next question here.
You can hijack whatever you want, man. This is your show. Go ahead.
Really closely here is I know we're going to talk about Tyler Boyd, and one of the things I noticed here, and this kind of ties into the Baldwin deal, is I think this year I am, like, super bullish, believe it or not, on Jimmy Graham, and I think that he is undervalued right now at his current draft spot. And when I look at Tyler Boyd being drafted ahead of Jimmy Graham, that's really – I mean, I get why people that are doing it, but I love Jimmy Graham ahead of Tyler Boyd. I know why people are doing it, but I don't think the volume will be there for Tyler Boyd. And I think, you know, at the end of the season when everything's flushed out, fantasy points-wise, I know that's what we're playing for, but I would take Jimmy Graham ahead of Tyler Boyd, for sure.
Yeah, especially in a tight end premium league like the FFPC. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I don't think I'm as excited about Jimmy Graham as you are, Jeff. The injury concerns me, man. I mean, coming back from something like that, and he wasn't necessarily really used in the offense last year. Why are you happy to pick up Jimmy Graham at his current draft spot? Is it just a value play?
Well, that's exactly what it is, right? I look around who he's being drafted around. Now, would I take offensive pairing Jenkins ahead of Jimmy Graham? Yeah. But we were talking about Seattle, so that's why I wanted to tie that in.
I gotcha.
I like his value there versus a Tyler Boyd, who's kind of an unproven commodity. You know, I think Jimmy Graham he's an amazing athlete. I think we all know that. And if anyone can come back from this injury, I feel like he can. If he has an ounce of pride, and I don't know the answer to that, quite honestly, but if he has an ounce of pride, and there's no doubt he's an athlete. There's no doubt he's, you know, arguably probably one of the top, I don't know, three most athletic tight ends in the NFL for sure. So if he's even anywhere near what he can be, and he has an ounce of pride, I feel like he will certainly outperform his current draft position. And I think the likelihood of that happening is higher than Tyler Boyd's likelihood of outperforming his current draft position.
Well, let's skip ahead and talk about Tyler Boyd as long as we're on it, because I think you've sort of answered the question, but we can talk about this a little bit more. Coley Harvey from ESPN.com says that Boyd's actually performed well during offseason workouts, but the wide receivers coach for Cincinnati, James Urban, wants to see how Boyd does actually when the pads are on in training camp before he's anointed the number two or number three receiver. The Bengals, of course, lost Mohamed Sanu to Atlanta, Marvin Jones to Detroit. Boyd was drafted by the Bengals in the second round. During his college career, Boyd caught a lot of passes, used to a large workload. Over the last 3 years of his collegiate career, he's been targeted at least 124 times. Rounds 14 to 16 is where he's going in the online stats and the Football Guys Players Championship for Boyd right now. We know that you would rather have Graham over Boyd, but in that area for the potential of having the number two receiver on Cincinnati, maybe not the number two pass catcher, but the number two wide receiver? Is Boyd a guy that you'd be looking at in that area?
I think he's okay. I think one of the questions that I have for guys who in college just got a ton of volume like Boyd did is, are they going to be able to stay interested when they're not getting the volume they're used to getting, right? And so when you look at this and you say, okay, you know A.J. Green is going to get his, you know, Eifert, let's say Eifert's healthy, when he's healthy, whatever, that he's going to get his. And so if you're a third option at best, fourth option, how is his focus going to be? You know, how interested is he going to remain? I think that's a fair question because, a rookie going in, you don't know the answer to that. So, I would look at him. I might have a few shares of him, but he's not a guy I'm necessarily going to target there now.
500, number 21, FFPC Dynasty Champ Jeff Seeley co-hosting tonight. Jeff, let's talk about the Detroit Lions. Matthew Stafford said that Eric Ebron has been coming along very well. I'm not going to read the full quote here, but it was very effusive. He was very effusive in his praise for Ebron as a guy who's really starting to get it. Remember, Eric Ebron, only 23 years old. Stafford saying he's showing a good work ethic in the offseason. This is his third season in the NFL. How likely is it, Jeff, that you'll be using an eighth-round pick on Eric Ebron in leagues this year?
Highly unlikely. And, again, given where he's being drafted again, I'd rather have Julius Thomas and I'd rather have Gary Barnes. And so I feel like he'll probably end up going in the seventh round in FFPC leagues and maybe even the sixth round in some, because he's super sexy and his name's just, to your point, his name is going to be in the news all a lot and he's going to be the high buzz guy. And Gary Barnage is, you know, got Robert Griffin, who everybody thinks sucks. And, you know, look at, you know, his opportunities last year. There's just no way I'm ever taking Ebron or Barnage or Julius Thomas for that matter. And I think the buzz is going to inflate his draft stock a little bit. So, if he drops to me like ninth, 10th round, yeah, I might have a few shares of him, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I think it's unlikely I'll own him.
A guy that's been going much later, actually, than Eric Ebron in a different position is Chris Thompson, the pass-catching running back from Washington. Now, normally I wouldn't bring him up, but Redskins insider Mike Jones actually made his 53-man roster prediction for the Washington football team this year, and he left rookie running back Keith Marshall, Dave Gerzak, who is a big fan of him, off that prediction. Marshall was the super fast guy out of Georgia who could not stay healthy, came in with Todd Gurley at Georgia and just could never get it going. He was a seventh-round pick, had some hamstring issues this offseason, so Matt Jones obviously is going to get all he can handle as the starter. But you talk about Matt Jones, a guy who was dinged up, who fumbled the football last year. Chris Thompson, you can get him in rounds 15, 16, and he could have a pretty significant role in that Washington backfield. Does this news make him a steal if Marshall does not make the team? Is Thompson a must-get then?
No, I think there's definitely value there. There's no doubt. And that's, as we talked about earlier, kind of one of those guys that if everything falls the right way, it could be the difference in you winning a football guy's championship. I mean, that really is the key kind of play you have to have go your way. I know another guy I really like who's being drafted around him is Zach Zenner. And I feel like he's another kind of similar guy in that, quite honestly, I'll probably have a lot of shares of both of those guys. And those are two guys that if things fall their way and they end up becoming the guy or getting, 60% of the carries, those are the guys that could win you the league overall. So those are two guys I'm really excited about.
Great stuff, Jeff. We're up against our last break here, so we're going to take it and come back with you, and we're going to answer a bunch of emails coming up from all of you listeners. This is the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. I'm Eric Balkman. He's Jeff Seeley. We're coming back right after this. It's the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. It is Eric Balkman. It is $500 Dynasty number 21 in the Fantasy Football Players Championship. Champion Jeff Seeley co-hosting tonight. Hey, let's get to some emails.
Tweet, 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 tweet.
If you've got a question for Eric Dave or tonight's guest, send them a tweet at HSFFHour on Twitter. Email the show at highstakesfantasyfootball@gmail.com. Post it in the chat room during the broadcast. Hashtag your tweet with HSFF or just smack Eric in the head. That's highstakesfantasyfootball@gmail.com or at HSFFHour on Twitter.
Kicking things off tonight is Terry in Herndon, Maryland. He writes, John Harbaugh seems to really be talking up Mike Wallace. Is this just off-season puffery, or is there something more here? I just got him in the 12th round of a satellite and am thinking that's a steal. That's Terry in Herndon, Maryland. Thank you for the email, Terry. Mike Wallace was a guy, Jeff, that I had considered drafting. This is a private dynasty league I was in, and it's deeper than FFPC dynasty leagues. I considered taking Mike Wallace with the second to last pick of the fourth round or the 47th player taken overall. Passed on it. Just not excited for him this year. I know that his talents probably play well or play better at least to a big arm quarterback like Joe Flacco. But there's some other receivers competing for touches there. There's a lot of running backs there, and there's a lot of tight ends. I'm not really sure. I know the Baltimore offense should be better this year. I just don't know where that production is going to come from. So I am not super high on Mike Wallace this year. Your thoughts on that speedster?
You know, I tend to agree with you in general. I thought it was interesting, his quote, that he needs a quarterback to help him. I thought that was interesting when I saw that quote, and it's obviously accurate, and at least he's self-aware enough to get that. You could make a case for Mike Wallace, but I don't hate him. I do like, he's being drafted right around Aguilar, who I like better, and he's being drafted 12 spots ahead of, I know everybody hates him, but Ted Ginn, and you look at Carolina, and I think one injury happens to either Benjamin or Funchess and get right back in there. So I would consider Ted Ginn around that same spot, but I would take Aguilar again over. I'd take Aguilar, probably Aguilar, Wallace, again, but I would really think closely about Wallace again. So I don't know. I could make an argument for any of the three, but I think that he's probably okay there. I probably won't take him.
Yeah, longtime listener of the show and FFPC player Joe Delzanero, known as Baker Boy, we've talked about some of his philosophies, and he always said, hey, listen, if it's after round 10, who cares? Just grab him. It
good
doesn't
point.
Matter. And so I don't want to hate
good
on
point.
A 12th round pick. I'm not going to fault you for taking Wallace there. But I will say this, sort of in detriment to what I just said, you have that Baltimore offense this year with no real studs at tight end, no real studs in the backfield. I mean, you have some capable guys, but I wouldn't call any of those guys super talented. And then you have Steve Smith coming off a really bad injury. We don't know how his recovery is going to go. Rashad Perriman continues to be hurt, and Kamar Aiken might just be a guy. So maybe Mike Wallace ends up enjoying the lion's share of production at receiver in Baltimore. I don't see it happening, but I could certainly make the case that it happens. But I'm with you, Jeff, in liking other guys at that area better than Mike Wallace, who seems to get a new team every single year.
All the Justin Forsett.
It could be. I mean, who knows? It definitely could be. I know Trestman said
like
he wants to
guy.
Run more this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Dave in Kansas City, Missouri writes, hello, Marshall and Edgerrin. With Frank Gore slowly approaching his 50th birthday and a relatively bare cupboard in the Colts backfield, are you loading up on Josh Ferguson as a cheap lotto ticket in your leagues this season? Thank you for the email, Dave in Kansas City, Missouri. Jeff, your thoughts on Ferguson? You can get him basically for free, and I think that he might stand a better shot than most backups, if he does indeed get the backup job, of actually getting some pretty productive or pretty meaningful playing time in that Colts offense behind an aging Frank Gore.
So I live in Indy, and I'm a Colts season ticket holder. So this is near and dear to my heart. And I will tell you that, what I've seen, and we've all seen this, to pay attention, but the Colts really, I mean, you look at their back the last few years, you've seen Boom Heron, you've seen Zerlon Tipton, you've seen, they pull people off the street. I mean, it's amazing. I should say, R.I.P. Zerline Tipton. But
yes.
There's every reason to believe that Josh Ferguson, you know, could very easily get. You know, if I'm setting an over under, I'd set the over under on his starts at like 4 games, which is really good for a guy you could basically have for free, like you said. So I know the Colts were high on him, and you know, if you believe what you read, they said that they would have drafted him, blah blah blah, but other guys fell on the charges, whatever. But they were happy to get him. I don't dislike him. I think that, again, if you're talking about a late round pick, I think he's a great late round pick. I think he could do far worse. I like him. And again, it could just as easily be me playing running back for the Colts week 10. Their philosophy really seems to be like, if you have any skill at ever whatsoever, you have a shot. So when I was at Colts camp 2 years ago, they had Zerline Tipton playing corner, and now he's back at running back. He was back at running back last year, and I really don't think they care much. It's really weird. So he has as good a shot as any, and so it's certainly worth a flyer.
Moving on to Dan in Duluth, Georgia. We all know rookie tight ends usually suck, and then every year we get a couple talented ones, and everyone starts saying they might be good enough to not have bad rookie seasons, and every year they always suck. So will this year be any different? Winky face. Thanks, FFPC guys. Dan in Duluth, Georgia. Dan, thank you so much for the well-crafted email. Austin Hooper, Hunter Henry, probably the two of the top tight ends, if not the two top tight ends in this rookie class. From a redraft perspective, Jeff, are you excited about either of these guys?
We just talked about flyers. And so I actually, as a flyer in, you know, again, in the late round, you know, 15, 16, I would take Hunter Henry, to be totally honest with you. Like Nick and I were talking about, and we were talking about trading back, like way back in the first round. And I would have taken Hunter Henry in the first round of the rookie redraft. I mean, I am super, super high on him as a pass catching talent, and especially in that offense. The guy is he's a great pass catcher. His hands are phenomenal, and he's huge. And so I really, really like him. And you know, redraft again, maybe a super late round flyer if you have a deep bench. Because listen, you know, Gates is going to get hurt, right? It's not a question of if, it's when and how long. So he's going to get hurt. You'll have an opportunity there. So I like Henry. Someone just offered me in our league we're talking about, our dynasty league, FPC dynasty league, offered me Diggs and Hooper for Greg Olsen. So, I'm not going to make that trade, but I like Hooper. Okay. But Jacob Tammy, is kind of just steady Eddie. And while I think Hooper is no doubt the more talented player in a redraft league, I would take Henry first 10 out of 10 times.
Makes sense to me as far as those two guys go. I definitely like Henry better than Hooper. Ryan in West Palm Beach, Florida. I know most of your guests say they usually wait on QBs, so I'm assuming they know which ones to draft later on. To that end, what do you think about Jameis Winston cracking the top 10 quarterbacks at season's end? Thanks, Ryan, for the email. Jameis Winston, I'm a Florida State guy. I was a big fan of the championship run, watching all those games, so I obviously appreciated what Jameis Winston was able to do in college. I think he's definitely on the fast track to being a difference maker at quarterback in the pros. Top 10 in 2016, I don't know. There's a lot of good quarterbacks. I would say he finishes outside the top 10, but it's not by much for my standards.
So let me ask you this, because I have my opinion. I want to hear yours first, and I'll give you mine. Who do you think has a better chance of cracking the top 10, Jameis Winston or Derek Carr?
Oh, I would say Derek Carr.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would agree with you. And I've heard, you know, a fair amount of chatter actually around Winston breaking that top 10. And again, that's probably, as I go into drafts during the season, I'll bet you in the auction draft I'm in that Winston ends up going for more than Carr. I think that that take actually is probably more of the public opinion than I think you and I are on the contrarian end of that take, believe it or not. And so I do not think he'll be in the top 10, finish the top 10 this year. I think, you know, could it happen? Sure. But I'd say it's probably, I don't know, 5-1. And I'd probably give Carr maybe 3 or 4 to 1 to do that. I think he can, but I would take Carr or Rivers ahead of Winston.
Yeah, I think the touchdowns come down a little bit for Carr this year. I don't know if he throws 32 again, but I don't even think he hit 4,000 yards last year. So the yardage should definitely go up. I just think that what he showed last year with the weapons around him, especially with Amari Cooper, I just think that he stands a better shot of being a top 10 quarterback than Winston. Final email of the night here, Jeff. Scott in Trenton, Kentucky writes, "Hi, fellas. This will be near and dear to you. Hi, fellas. Andrew Luck is now the highest paid player in NFL history, but will he be able to finish as the highest scoring quarterback in 2016? Have a great fourth, Scott in Trenton, Kentucky." Scott, thanks for the email. You have a happy fourth as well. Andrew Luck is the number one quarterback this year. Certainly possible. Will it happen, Jeff?
I'd put him, if he's not one, he's 1A or 2. I think the top 5 are fairly clear, maybe top 6, and Luck certainly in that conversation. I mean, well, here's what we know, right? Their running game is archaic. They have talented wide receivers, and in theory, they have an improved offensive line. Their defense is, let's just call it, below average. And so, in general, their roster really is just not very good. They have Luck, a little bit better line, let's say, and good wide receivers. So you know he's going to throw. If the line can give him a little more time, then maybe he'll find some more running lanes or some more time to scramble and run. So I think we'll see probably more rushing. Well, he obviously got hurt last year. I think he'll run a fair amount again. I think his wide receiver core is young and healthy as long as they stay that way. Between Dwayne Allen, Moncrief, T.Y. the gang, I think they'll be fine. So I think if I'm handicapping it, I would make him probably tied for the favorite with maybe an Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton. Maybe I'd make him each 2-1, 2-1, 3-1, right around there. But I would make him a top 3.
Yeah, I think Hilton has a nice bounce back this year. I think Moncrief breaks out. And I've been talking about, ever since Kobe Fleener went to New Orleans, I've been talking about, I think Dwayne Allen's going to be fantastic this year.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
I mean, he's such a big red zone target. Luck seemed to look for him. I think that Colts offense is going to be something to watch this year. And also something to watch, Jeff Seeley trying to defend his 2015 FFPC 500 number 21 Dynasty Championship. Jeff, I want to thank you for coming on the show and co-hosting with me tonight. It was awesome to have you. You brought a lot of stuff to the table that I don't think, at least I haven't considered in a while. And it's always good to get a refreshing perspective on that. Everybody is going to follow you on Twitter at HeHaithme, HeHaithme. And when we're looking for what's going to happen in the MAC, maybe some good picks, some good college football MAC picks, we're going to check your Twitter account this fall.
Sounds great. I appreciate having me on.
Thanks, Jeff. Much appreciated for you coming on, and a happy 4th to you as well as we get into the 4th of July weekend. People, it's here. Normally, this is the big kickoff for the Football Guys Players Championship. We've been doing that for the last month. So definitely, if you have not registered, this is the weekend that we always started it. So make sure you draft this weekend. If you checked out the FFPC email today or went to the FFPC blog, the FFPC Twitter, Facebook, all the draft times we have available are listed right in there. You can sign up for leagues tomorrow and Sunday. So it's going to be a great weekend in general and for fantasy as well. I think we've had Lance Turvis co-host this show in the past. We may need to bring him on again with some of the Frank Gore and Jerry Rice stories that are flying around in the chat room right now. A lot of great stuff there that I'm going to have to explore further when I see him out in Vegas this September. A lot of great stuff there. So anyway, that is going to do it for tonight's show, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank Jeff Seeley for coming on and co-hosting. I want to thank the FFPC, of course, our mutual friend and producer, Rob, our audio engineer, Bryce, and you for hanging out this 4th of July weekend and listening to me talk for 75 minutes. We'll be back next Friday at 10, 9 Central with Dave. The Dizzle will be back in the studio, and Football Guys Players Championship League Champs and Pros versus Joe competitors Ted Planka and Dan Holloman. They'll be on the show. They're going to talk about PBJ strategy. Join the Football Guys Players Championship today. Happy 4th of July. Your holiday weekend starts now.
This has been
now.
Another episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com that was broadcast live and heard around the world. Eric and Dave will be back next week with more analysis, interviews, and advice from a guest much smarter than they are. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk with you again next week.
So Lance's older sister got Jerry Rice's hotel key, and apparently his cousin was asked out on a date by Frank Gore, and she couldn't understand Frank Gore on the phone, so she asked him to text her. You can't make this stuff up, folks. That's Lance Tervis at Sport Betting Man on Twitter. Great stuff. Have a great weekend.